Welcome to the Faith Together podcast from the Center for Faith and Family at Olivet Nazarene University. If you believe that passing down Christian faith is essential for the next generation, you are in the right place. Enjoy conversations with guests who are faith practitioners, parents, caregivers, pastors, counselors, and many more. You'll enjoy practical tools and community for passing down Christian faith to your children and grandchildren.
Well, welcome back to the Faith Together podcast, everybody. We wish you a very happy new year. And I'm Lindsay here today with Leon. Hi, Leon.
Hello, Lindsay. Good to be back with you after a little bit of a break.
It is good to be back. Did you have nice holidays?
Yes, I did.
Good, good, good. Well, this is a new year, 2024. Can't believe it. And with every new year comes, drumroll please, resolutions, right?
Yeah, right.
Lots of resolutions. I don't know about you, but I haven't quite landed on what mine is yet. Maybe you know what yours is there at home. Leon, do you have one this year?
I'm wanting to get back into my regular routine of working out. So
okay.
Maybe if I say it out loud, then I'll be a little more consistent in doing it. So I really want to do that. I want to focus. I'm at the age now where I need to really focus on my health.
Sure.
So I want to be around for a long, long time for my grandkids in particular.
Yeah.
I mean, others as well, but my grandkids in particular. And so, yeah, so I think that's probably, I don't really like making New Year's resolutions.
Sure.
But that's my commitment for this year.
Yeah, I love that. I think I'm going to tag on to that. I can use that in my own life. Consistency, discipline,
yeah,
with health, with working out, with eating the right things, all of that.
Yeah. Eating the right things, that's the hard part for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Especially after enjoying all the Christmas treats.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So we're just so glad to be back with you all. We hope that you had wonderful holidays. And if you're just joining us for the first time, welcome. We have been here at the Faith Together podcast for a few episodes now. So if you haven't joined us before, we would welcome you to go back and listen to any of our episodes we've had. We've had a couple different series. Our first series was on healthy parenting, and then we had our Advent series. And so those are still there for you if you'd like to listen in. And we're excited today to begin a new series for the new year. We know that with the new year comes a lot of reflection. A lot of time to think on, I wonder how last year went, and also I wonder how I want this year to look. What are some things I might want to change, do differently? That's this time of year and what it brings to our minds and to our hearts. And so our new series that we're starting today is going to be called Moving Forward by Looking Back. Moving Forward by Looking Back.
Yeah, Laura. That sounds like kind of what we do at New Year's, right?
Mm-hmm.
We kind of, as you said, we reflect back on the past year or years of our lives, evaluating and then making plans to look forward.
Yeah. So as we listen in today to the Faith Together podcast, our goal and our vision always is how we can pass on faith to the next generation, to the kids that we love so much. And so today we want to kind of look back to move our faith forward.
Right. So part of that looking back goes back to the beginning of this project. So if you weren't with our earlier podcast, you may not know that this podcast is being sponsored through a grant we received from Lilly Endowment to open a Center for Faith and Family. And this podcast is part of that project. And in the early days of that proposal, we were kind of going through and thinking, well, what exactly do families need? Where do we even begin this project? Lilly came to us and said they wanted us to focus on helping parents pass their faith to their kids. And so we began the process of thinking through, what does that look like? And part of that journey included a colleague of mine. Actually, I probably shouldn't call him a colleague. He is a colleague, but he's really more of a friend. And that is Dr. Mark Freesius. And he is with us today. Dr. Freesius, we're glad you're here.
Yeah,
thank you. It's great to be here.
Okay, I'm just going to call you Mark because you're just Mark, right?
That's right.
Okay. So we want to make sure that we kind of give you a little into where we started on this. So Mark and I...
Ooh, a little sneak peek.
Yeah, Mark and I at the beginning of
behind
this project.
The scenes.
Yes.
Behind the scenes, right. we began asking some questions about what will be unique about what we want to try to do and all those kind of things. And in the process, Mark came to me and said, I think I have an idea. And so I listened and was quite intrigued with his idea. And so we're going to share a little bit of that idea over the next several podcasts, I think. It's going to take us a little while maybe to work through all of it. Mm-hmm. We hope you'll stay with us through that, because this, I think, will give you some insight into why we're going to do the things we're going to do as part of this podcast.
Love it. Love it. So, Leon, we are moving forward by looking back and taking a moment to remember why we're doing this podcast of Faith Together, where it began. And then Mark is going to share more with us about how we can continue to pass faith on in a very interesting and dynamic way.
Right. So why don't we start with Mark? Why don't you share a little bit with our audience about who you are?
It's great to be here. So I am a professor of theology in the School of Theology and Christian Ministry at Olivet. I'm also the director of undergraduate studies, which means I'm not just colleague and friend, but I'm also boss for Leon as well.
Oh, yes, you had to bring that up, didn't you?
But I've been there for 15 years. I teach mostly church history, and you'll probably get a sense of that as we go. So I've been married for 23 years. So my wife is Ellen. Then we have two boys, a 14-year-old going on 15, and then a 12-year-old. So they keep life pretty exciting for us.
Yeah, and so they've been a part of the ministry that I'm a part of at our church, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so it's been a joy.
So you're Pastor Leon at our house.
That's, yeah.
Oh, I love that.
And it's been a joy investing in their lives and being a part of that. All right, so where do we begin with this, Mark?
So maybe we can start just like 2 years ago. So Leon just kind of sent out a broad email to say, hey, we've got this opportunity for a grant, and anybody got any ideas? I just kind of suggested to him that in kind of the looking back sort of phase that what if we looked back at how very early Christians kind of thought about passing on their faith to new converts, to their children, and what were kind of the steps and the processes that they went through? And that was kind of the initial kind of thought process behind it that kind of led to the grant proposal and became kind of, I kind of think of it as the guts of kind of the center.
Yeah, a bit of the catalyst for sure. And it's what made our proposal, I think, unique from other institutions that also made proposal for the same grant.
Yeah, and I think it helps us to kind of get to I call it the why behind the what. So a lot of the podcasts have been about very kind of practical things that we can do. Like I remember Brandon and his halt. Are they hungry? Are they angry? Are they lonely? Are they tired?
Uh-huh.
And that's a pretty good one to go back to.
It is. It's so good.
So good. But kind of my part was to think about kind of the why behind those whats. And why do we even have to have, a center for faith and family? Why do we have to even have the conversation about how do we pass on our faith to our kids in a way that is meaningful, sticks, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So why do we need these new strategies and approaches? And one of the things that I was kind of reflecting on was that it kind of seems to me like it's gotten a little bit harder lately. When I was growing up, so I grew up in the 80s, and it just kind of seemed like it was kind of this natural part of life, right? That your parents take you to church, you become a member of the faith, and then away you go.
Just part of your everyday.
Yeah.
You're coming, you're going. Part of your rhythms.
Yeah. And then it kind of seems like it's changed.
Definitely.
Like we can't have the same kind of set of assumptions that we used to have. And as a parent to a teenager and an almost teenager, and as a university professor who then sees like the kids at the end of kind of their formative journeys, the struggles of really kind of passing on and owning your faith really has become quite apparent to me lately.
Yeah, and I think you hit a real important term, Mark, when you said owning your faith, because what we're really interested in is not just kind of passing on our faith to kids and then they just kind of tag on to what we already believe, but it's really important for a transformation of our kids, which is what we're really looking for, is that they own that faith. So kind of how did they do that is kind of the question we're trying to answer, right?
Yeah, and even why do we have to even have the conversation, too?
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. So Mark, when you think about all of these things and passing on faith so that kids, students, adults even own their own faith and move forward, what do you think, as we look at this topic of passing on faith to kids, to students, to adults, to own their own faith, to not let it pass by, to really be able to walk it out in their everyday lives, what have you found out about why it seems more difficult now, especially as every generation, as you see as a professor, as a parent, has its own particular set of challenges?
Yeah, every generation does kind of have those kind of, what are the hurdles that we have to jump over for owning our faith, for passing our faith on? But it does kind of seem, right, like it's become a very significant question in our current kind of cultural context. And part of that is there seems to have been a pretty big change in American culture within the last couple of decades where, again, things that we could assume about other people mm-hmm. and assume about maybe even like the educational system or about the priorities of companies and organizations, all that has kind of changed. Yeah. And so scholars are starting to talk about something called the post-Christian America, which is just kind of fancy words for people who have kind of decoupled or moved away from faith or that mm-hmm. faith isn't kind of central to them. And so many will kind of point to different places where this de-Christianization seems to have kind of been happening. So some will kind of point to like the 80s and 90s.
Okay.
So as kind of this origin point. So we had things back in the 80s like the moral majority. Some of you listeners might remember those folks. Their goal was to put people into positions of power so that we could pass legislation at a national level to enforce essentially Christian morality on everybody. And then we had a pushback against that, and we had the MTV generation and all those kinds of things going on. Others maybe point to, say, like the 60s or 70s as kind of a slide or change in American culture, Woodstock, the hippies, free love, those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. Others will point even to, say, like the 1920s as kind of the beginning point of this. So that's when things like the Scopes Monkey Trial is going on and Christianity and culture kind of started to come into conflict as Christians tried to figure out what do we do with things like evolution, with Darwin, those sorts of things. And so it started to create this divide, right, mm-hmm. between Christianity and the prevailing culture within America. So in kind of modern terms then, some of the statistics really kind of bear this out, how America is moving past Christianity. In 2015, Barna, which is a firm that tracks statistics related to faith, suggested that 44% of all Americans are listed as post-Christian, and that this is following, the historian in me is going to come out just a little bit, this is following the trend that we see in Europe. So if you go to Europe, like churches are just empty on Sundays. The legislation that you see is not terribly influenced by Christian thoughts or ideals. And most suggest the United States lags behind by like 30, 40 years from Europe. And so you kind of look at Europe and you're like, that's where we're headed. And so we start to find a lot of that movement away from that church, and Christianity is really kind of an important part of life or faith or culture at all.
Yeah, that's really helpful to kind of process through that movement. So Mark, you've used the term a couple times, post-Christian. I just want to make sure, because that may be an unfamiliar term for some of us, to again reinforce, help us again to better understand the concept of being post-Christian.
Yeah, so probably the basic idea of it is that the culture is no longer primarily Christian.
Okay.
That Christianity is not the dominant force in kind of the marketplace of society.
Okay, so then when we say, from Barna's research, that 44% of Americans fall into the post-Christian category, we're saying that the basic understanding of what we thought about of Christian morals and ethics are not naturally a part of the way that they think. Is that fair?
Right. So that can be a part of it. Some of it can just be that the church is no longer central to their lives, that they don't kind of base their life around their faith, but it could be something that faith is just maybe a part of what I do. Maybe I go to church on Easter and Christmas. And so it's not necessarily just saying that people have lost their faith. That can be a part of it, but that the centrality of faith in the way in which our society, our culture, our families are organized has moved to something other than Christianity.
Okay.
Yeah, that's really helpful, because I think when I hear post-Christian, I immediately go to the place of just not Christian at all, completely, you know, refuse faith, any kind of faith, just on their own. So hearing you explain it in that way is very helpful, because I'm sure those of you listening, and even, you know, the three of us here today, we can identify people in our lives, in our families, in our close communities, in our support systems that see faith as something that's not a central part of their life, but they appreciate it and respect it for what it is in our lives, but may just see it differently in theirs. So that's just really helpful. I know we even at my own church have people that come in checking out faith, and they've not made that commitment to make it all for their whole lives.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It really kind of is on like a spectrum that it can be all kinds of different responses to Christianity.
All right. So that's helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So if all of that is true, then what are the implications of that move toward a post-Christian society?
Yeah, I think it really kind of then challenges, you know, things that we used to just be able to assume about our culture, about people that we meet, you know, within our culture. So I think of three kind of implications for it. One, that we can no longer assume that culture will reinforce traditional Christian teachings in terms of the existence of God, in terms of, you know, Christian morality, our general expectations for marriage, for raising children, all of those sorts of things have changed. And so sometimes it can be like the culture is not just reinforcing it. Other times it can be that the culture is actually very hostile towards a traditional Christian understanding of things. A second one is we can't assume a basic Christian orientation in terms of beliefs or ethics from just the people we meet on the street. So it used to be like we would talk about a Judeo-Christian model, and that the United States is built on Christian principles. And they're just, you kind of have the basic assumption that the whoever you meet is probably has gone to church, goes to church all the time, something like that. And that is certainly
knows the
changed.
Bible stories,
right.
Can say John 3:16.
Yeah, they know who Noah is or Jesus is, all those things. We mm-hmm. can't take that for granted anymore. So it means that then the culture is not kind of filling in some of the things that it used to fill in as far as the Christian faith goes. And then when we think about the public sphere, then Christianity is not anymore the dominant engine that kind of drives what goes on in public discourse, in the passing of laws, those sorts of things. So you can think about things like the curriculum of schools and the points that they're emphasizing, how much of it should be communicated to parents, how much of it is built upon the Bible, those sorts of things. And again, that has dramatically shifted, even from the time when I remember going to school.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There's so much we could say about each of those topics, isn't there?
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the things that Mark and I are both kind of known for, maybe me more so than Mark, is rabbit trails. And I could
give you a good run for your money.
We could go on some rabbit trails here, but we want to really stay focused to get to our end goal.
Yeah,
that's good. So Mark, it sounds like that movement of culture could create some real tension for the church as it tries to navigate, how do we respond? Where do we go from here? What do we do about this? Is we've lost the best days of our history, you know, all of those kind of things. So tension?
Yeah. Yeah. Probably a lot of tension.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I look historically, like there's always been tension between the church and culture, and how do we respond to it? And what aspects are just kind of neutral in culture, and what parts are kind of antagonistic, which parts are supportive? But kind of the movement seems to be less supportive and more kind of apathetic or antagonistic. And it seems to be accelerating. I think most people tend to agree that. So some kind of tend to call it like the degradation of American society. Others call it the cultural wars. But culture and Christianity no longer seem like they're in step with each other. And so one of the tensions this causes then is when we think about kind of a traditional Christian morality, that now it starts to become more equated. So you can see this in a lot of popular literature, that traditional Christian morality just relies on guilt and shame to get people to do things. So you're guilted into being sinful, and then you're shamed when you sin. And so you don't really have a part of the church, and then you start to have mental health difficulties. And so it kind of becomes this idea that Christianity is just kind of this bunch of rules, where we guilt you and we shame you, and that then kind of the drive to live the Christian life then becomes more about the avoidance of unpleasant consequences or fear of God and hell rather than kind of a transformation of my life so that I desire and want to follow God because I love God. And so it starts to create that tension because culture kind of moves away from it and then becomes very critical of how Christianity has done things in the past.
Hmm. Yeah, that reminds me a lot of, I seem to have several conversations with whether it's kids, families, you know, my own family, you know, different women that I'm discipling, whatever that might look like. It seems that there is this tendency to lean towards a life for God that's just very regimented and this is what I have to do, a checklist, rather than a life with God, where God is in and present and with you in each hardship, in each season, you know, that you're in. So I'm hearing a lot of that, that you're saying that, you know, it can easily fall into this place of the church is just, this is what you have to do for God, for him to love you, to be right. You know, that's what Christianity is.
Right. Yeah. It becomes kind of about earning God's love. And then God is really upset with us and really sad and doesn't really like us that much when we sin. And so then it's up to me to fix it. Yeah. It starts to become this really kind of difficult dynamic that sometimes in the church we haven't done a great job of really kind of talking about the character of God terribly well.
Yeah. And I do just want to clarify something, and maybe both of you can help me with this. But when we say the church, we're not meaning just the physical church building, right? For our listeners out there, we're talking about being a part of the family of God.
Right. The community of faith.
The community of faith. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. So, you know, many of us have had friends and family who have at some point along the journey kind of walked away from their faith. I have often heard from older adults, especially when they're talking to their child or grandchild who's getting ready to go off to college, you don't let those people steal your faith. I think that's part of what we're concerned about. And so how big of an issue is this becoming, Mark, of people kind of like walking away from their faith? You know, there's lots of stats out there. I've heard people say a large majority of people are walking away from their faith when they go to college. I've heard other people say a lot of that's made up and it's not as bad as we think it is. Where are we in all of this?
Yeah, so there's been a couple of studies that have been published about kind of what we call de-Christianization, because like I tell my students, one of the jobs of being a scholar is we have to have giant words that then people pay us to explain to them. It's just, others call it deconversion. Or it's just simply is walking away. So you were raised in a faith tradition, and then at some point in your life, you make the conscious choice to kind of leave it behind. And so there have been a couple studies that talk about this. So Lifeway Research in 2017 reported that 66% of students who attended church for at least 1 year have stopped attending on a regular basis. Now, again, this doesn't mean they've left Christianity, but that in terms of being an attender of church, that's stopped. And by students, they're talking there about high school students going into college. In 2019, Barna also put the number at 64% had dropped out of the church. This does create a pretty significant, I think, issue for the church, and especially when we think about passing on our faith, that it perhaps highlights that there's becoming a disconnect from how it is that our faith has been passed on in the past to how it is that we're doing it in the current climate.
Yeah, and I think maybe some of that begs the question of, at least for me, as a Christian education person who's really, my focus is about transformation, I wonder how much of this is students moving out of a protective environment where they've been under the leadership of a church, under the leadership of parents, they've kind of believed in the same faith, and then because that faith is not personally owned, not that they're not Christian, but that they haven't really owned the faith and made it their personal faith, that when they're outside of the protection of the church, their local church and their family, that now they're beginning to question a lot of that. They're around other people who are also questioning a lot of that. I wonder how much of this is a faith-owning issue. Thoughts on that?
I think it is. And I think part of the difficulty becomes that we don't give space to ask questions. And we'll get into this in a later podcast as well, but the sense of that not everything is going to come naturally to everybody.
Yeah.
Not everybody is going to pick up on kind of some of the different teachings of Christianity. And it means patiently going back and working with them, talking to them, answering their questions. We kind of started the podcast and I mentioned the why behind the what. And I think that's very kind of central in passing on faith. It's that rules thing. Like, we can have all of the rules, but then it just becomes kind of this dogmatic following of things when we don't actually understand the why do we have these rules here in the first place. What's the thought behind it, the rationale behind it? And then that forces us to ask the question, is that a good rationale? Should we still be doing this way?
Yeah.
And oftentimes we don't have a place where we can kind of talk about that and ask questions.
I really agree with that. I think that this generation particularly loves to have space to ask questions, and they need that space. And especially as we see with kids, it's easy just to tell them what to believe or to say they'll catch up with that when they're older. You know, so there's these two places that we're trying to fill that gap, and kids are not able to ask the questions that they need to ask as they grow.
Oh, that's such a good point. I think that for many of our kids, they have learned what questions are not allowed to be asked because of how people will respond. So, is God real? How do I understand God? You know, my parents have told me that the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy are real. They also told me Jesus is real. I've discovered some things about those first three that may or may not be true. Is that true for Jesus? And I don't dare ask that question. I think many of our kids have learned that's a dangerous question to be asking, but I think they're still asking it internally. And I think that's part of what we want to help with, right?
Yeah.
And probably part of it is that back a few generations, if they asked that question internally and they went to culture, and culture would give them an answer fairly similar to what the faith had given them.
Oh, yes.
Now culture's not giving them that answer. So they don't have a place to be able to ask the question. Or we even equate it sometimes with, if you ask the question, well, you might not have faith. Instead of, I'm trying to explore and understand it, and then where I do find answers is outside of kind of a Christian environment in a culture that is, again, at best, perhaps apathetic and just doesn't care about Christianity.
Yeah, that's really good insight.
It is. And you think about family units throughout the generations have become more siloed as far as having time together and connection together. Of course, we hope that your family, as you're listening in, isn't that way, and that, you know, we've taken time to talk about what it looks like to have healthy family relationships. But that's not the case for many of the kids and the students that we see and we get to come alongside. Just as you're saying, they may want to take some questions to their families, but just don't feel comfortable to do so.
Yeah. Mark, you mentioned the 2019 Barna study, which I think is really helpful. Are there like trends that kind of Barna discovered from that study that would be helpful for us?
Yeah, so there's a couple of trends in this, again, process of moving away from the faith of your parents. So usually one of three things ends up happening. One is, if it was a little more rules-based, then you go looking for a more permissive form of Christianity that interacts a little bit differently with culture than traditional Christianity has. So there you might find very different takes on the permission for or permissiveness of sex outside of marriage, divorce, LGBTQ, science, politics. You kind of name it. So that's one possible kind of response. A second kind of response would be to adopt what I call kind of a vague spirituality, where I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious. So I believe there's a vague God-like thing out there. Maybe it has something to do with me, maybe it doesn't, but it really doesn't impact who I am or what I do. And then the third possibility would be then to just leave the faith. Leave any faith. So in the literature now, this is called the nuns, not the ones who wear the habit like Whoopi Goldberg, but would be N-O-N-E-S. So when they fill out the surveys and it asks you for your religious preference, they would put none down there. So Pew Research, who does, again, a lot of kind of research on religious trends in America, puts the number of nuns in America at 29%.
Wow. That's staggering.
Yeah, again, that's no faith convictions at all. So it doesn't just reflect people who've left Christianity, but people who've left Islam, Buddhism, whatever their religion had been.
Wow. Well, that seems like it's a significant shift have been, right? Pretty dramatic. So I'm wondering then, are there other times throughout the history of the church that we've seen anything like this. And maybe that's where we're headed, right?
Yeah, because you're the historian, so you have to ask me that question. But in Western Christianity, this is kind of a new ground for us a little bit, or at least ground that we haven't seen for a while. So for about the last 1,700 years or so, in a sense,
Did you say 1,700 years?
I did say 1,700 okay. years.
I don't even know how to process that.
That's a long time.
It's been a bit. Uh-huh. So for those 1,700 years, for the most part, in kind of Western culture, so Europe and then the United States and maybe North America and South America, you could kind of count that Christianity was the dominant force within culture, within politics, within religion. But it hasn't always been that way. So one of the things that as I was kind of starting the research on for the center mm-hmm. Was to look back at when did kind of Christianity become the dominant religion and then what was it like beforehand? So usually people will put the change in the year 312. So that's
pretty specific.
That's very specific.
Yeah.
We have actually very specific dates for some of these. So this is when the Emperor Constantine has his somewhat famous conversion experience, marking him out as the very first Roman emperor who becomes a Christian. And everything changes as a result of that. Persecution ends. So in the year 311, there was what we call the Great Persecution. It lasted for about 10 years. A lot of people died. A lot of people left the faith. And then Constantine comes around, becomes Christian. In the next year, in 313, he issues the Edict of Milan to give people freedom to be Christian, and he legalizes Christianity, and it becomes kind of his religion. So with that, then, we start the process that we call the Christianization of the Roman Empire. So we're in that de-Christianization phase, so this is the start of it. All right, so Christianity spreads quite rapidly. People start making commitments for various reasons, for sure, but it starts to take on an overall Christian tone to the empire, and it will stay that way as the dominant religion until arguably kind of our current context. So looking back before then, it got me thinking, like, what was it like before that happened? How did they do things? So the question that kind of came central to me was what can we learn from how the church in that pre-Christian environment, how did they pass on their faith? Because they were facing a culture that was apathetic, didn't really care about Christianity, or was antagonistic, they were killing Christians.
Yeah.
So how did they kind of navigate that? And so that kind of became the focus for kind of the development of the theory or the guts behind the Center for Faith and Family.
Yeah. Yeah. So what can we learn from pre-Christian culture that might help us in a post-Christian culture? So when Mark proposed this, it was quite intriguing to me. So what we've done is we've kind of set the table here for you today. We've not really given you any practical, go teach your kids about Constantine.
Yeah.
And how things change.
Yeah, Mark would be in favor of that. But maybe what we're doing is we're kind of setting the table for this series,
yeah.
I think, Lindsay, that will help us as we in the future talk about real practical things that we can do that we learn from the work we're doing right now.
Yeah, so it goes with our title for this series, we're moving forward by looking back. So this episode was some time and a little bit into next episode of looking back of what we can learn in those pre-Christian times that we can connect to our post-Christian times today.
So thank you for joining us today. I hope you learned something new and that you will join us next week as we continue this conversation and learn better how to go about passing faith on to our children in a way that transforms their lives so that they own their own faith. May the Lord bless you, keep you, and give you peace. You've been listening to the Faith Together podcast from the Center for Faith and Family at Olivet Nazarene University. Sign up for additional resources at centerff.com. When building faith, we are better together.